Today we're going to talk about technical communication, which is an important part of engineering. We're going to start talking about technical writing. A lot of this will overlap into the rest of the talk today with technical presentations. We'll talk about preparing figures for technical documents, both writing and presentations, and a little bit about citing and documenting the sources of your information. So that's our plan today. Today will be one of the days where it's mostly lecture. We probably will have a little bit of time at the end where you can get with your tower team if you like. But it's going to be mostly lecture for today. On Thursday, we'll be mostly lab. Okay. So first question. Whoa, what's going on there? Give me a second. Let's see what's going on with the display. Alrighty then. Give me a second. Whatever they did to fix this seems to have broken everything else. Yep. Let's try this way. Sorry for the delay. If this looks better. Maybe not. Yes, ma'am. All right, we'll work without our titles for today. So why should I care? You should care because all the little small details matter. And if I look really frustrated right now, I am. Because this, we'll get to this more about this in the presentation. All the details of your presentation, how you talk to your audience, how you convey information to your audience, the small details in your figures, the small details in your presentation convey that you're producing a high-quality product. Right? You can have the greatest product up front, greatest product you design you have, you're unable to communicate it effectively, it's not worth much at all. In fact, it's basically worthless. You have a high quality design, if you can't communicate it in a high quality way, it's not worth much at all. You're not going to be able to convince people that it is high quality. Okay? Communication matters. Right? That doesn't convince you. My frustration is not convincing you right now. Maybe this does. Those that can communicate effectively are those that tend to rise through the ranks and become bosses and CEOs. Okay? So if you're only in this because engineers make a lot of money, okay, and have the potential to make a lot of money, then you want to make sure you can effectively communicate as an engineer. That's going to push you into engineering management and up through that side of the business where the salaries get much, much, much larger. Right? When we're thinking about technical communication, we're preparing documentation, technical documentation, the first questions to ask in writing is, what's the purpose of this particular document that I'm working on right now? Okay. Why am I writing this? Okay. And who's going to read it? Who's the primary audience for the document that I'm writing? Right. Is it an end user? Is it meant to be an instruction manual that is packaged with whatever you're designing? Is it a manual to your maintenance team? Right? Is it some overview documentation to give to your sales team so they can sell your design? Right? All those different documents, they're all technical documents, but the purpose of that document is different for in each one of those cases. Okay? In any one of those cases, depending on your audience, you need to think about a variety of different things for that audience. What's their technical competence? Right? What are the expectations of that reader? What are they bringing to the document? Okay. What are the language skills? Are you writing for an audience that has all English as the first speakers? Or does your audience include people who speak English as a second or even third language? Right, so that's to dictate how you need to write. Depending on what kind of document you're writing, you might need to consider the interests of your audience. Right, if you're helping your sales team, perhaps come up with sales copy, PR information about a design you have, you need to think about what's going to interest your customer in your product. Right? So that's going to, you need to understand what my customer is interested in order to do that. So that list and what you can think about in terms of your audience can go on and on. Right. We talked largely about this class being about identifying customers and what they want from a product. Well, this is very, very similar to that. Right. We're looking at the document as the product in some way, as a separate product. Right. So who are the customers of this document and what kind of requirements and expectations do they have for the document itself? So a week from today, we'll talk a lot about figuring out who our customers are and what they care about. Okay. So once we thought about, thought about what the purpose of the document is, we want to look at what are we reporting in a technical document. In general technical documents, what we're presenting, what we're reporting is accomplishments and results. Okay. So a design, prototype, some results from an experiment, right? If it's a really kind of theoretical academic paper, you might present a new theory. Okay? You might have a plan to solve some problem that no one saw before. A mathematical proof showing that some system works the way it's supposed to work. Okay? We're not presenting on kind of administration of the team or what you believe or what you think as a person. Okay? It doesn't matter. You don't need to tell your reader how hard you worked on something. So it's not, we did this, and then we tried that, and we worked really hard, and we stayed up the night before the contest and did this and that, and it finally worked. That's not what belongs in these reports at all. Okay? So no information on team meetings. Okay? Your reader is not interested in that information. What you're presenting in a technical document is the actual results. General guidelines, we need to maintain consistent formatting in terms of fonts, figure sizes and aspect ratios, margins throughout the document. All this stuff mainly needs to be consistent. You can make a choice on that within some bounds and it'd be okay as long as you're consistent with your formatting. We want to generally avoid first person. So in technical documentation, we generally don't talk about ourselves. Right. So that means first person shouldn't show up for the most part. Okay. And in particular, as you're first learning how to do this, the Slack point pushes you towards avoiding first person even more. And why we push so hard on in this class. We don't want to write the document in the order that we did stuff. Right. We'll see more detail on that in a minute. Right. So when we say we need to avoid chronological narrative structure, that's what we're trying to avoid. Just relaying information to the audience or reader in the order we did it. That's not what we want to do. Right? We don't present it in logical order of largely importance. Okay? So if you're doing this, you tend to do that, which is why we push away from using first person. Okay? As you develop more skill as a writer, you can maybe start slipping some first person back in. But as you're learning, you want to keep that in mind. You know, generally avoid first person. That includes referring to yourself in the third person. That's not much better. Right, so Team 7 designed is the same thing as we designed. Okay. So that's no better. Okay. And again, that's largely to avoid that chronological discussing, narrative discussion of what you've done. Okay. Another main point here is you need to revise, I say 10 times, depending on what you think, might be 100. You need to revise your reporting, revise your writing way more than you think you need to. One thing I do, particularly as I get close to a final draft, is actually read it out loud to myself. Okay? Mistakes that your brain just naturally corrects if you're reading silently, don't get corrected if you slow down and try to read it out loud. Right? You switch into kind of a different mode of thinking. The other thing you can do is both the most recent versions of Mac OS and Windows have a, you can select a, hot, a block of text, right-click on it, and speak. And the computers speak the text, look at that, those sentences, and read them to you. And those algorithms are all designed to work best when there's proper grammar and no typos and things like that. So they start to sound really weird if there's bad grammar, if there are typos, punctuations off, those kind of things. So mistakes in your writing can kind of jump out at you if you use either one of those things. Okay. And the point here is that the putting the words on the page part of writing is a very, very small part of writing in general. Okay. You want to be a good writer, be a great editor. Okay. All of these things are part of working towards our main job as an author. Our main job in, as an author is to make the reader's job as easy as possible. You have technical information you're trying to convey to an audience, convey to a reader. It's your job to make their understanding that as easy as possible for them. Okay. So if you're not doing these things, if your fonts and margins are all over the place and figures are all weird sizes and blurry and it, your reader can't understand them, you're making their job harder. Right? If you haven't proofread and your grammar is terrible, you're making their job harder. Okay. All this stuff goes towards that point. Okay. Just like the actual act of engineering, the project you're working on, writing is also a team effort. Okay. So that leads to some common mistakes, particularly in a classroom setting like this one, or in senior design, for example. Right. One common mistake is kind of each person writes a section, and you staple it together and turn it in. Okay. That's going to lead to a lot of problems. Right? One is going to be inconsistent voice. All of us write a little bit differently. Right? So every section is going to read a little bit differently, and that's going to get in your way, your reader's way of understanding the information. You also, particularly if you're using like Word or Google Docs and that has the formatting copy and paste along with it, you're going to have inconsistent formatting, which we just said gets in the way of your reader's understanding of what you're trying to present. Okay? You might use inconsistent terminology. You're talking about a design, and you think about it a different way than one of your teammates might. But you're talking about the same thing. You understand maybe how that's confusing for someone that's trying to read that documentation. Okay. Working on separate sections, you're going to have to do that. The key is to avoid that last part. You're going to have to come together as a team and revise and edit and make sure it's consistent. Okay. So don't work in isolation from each other. Staple it together and think you're done. Okay. You can work separate sections, make sure you have come together as a team and edit before you submit a final version. The other common practice in classes like this in senior design is kind of one person says, hey, I'm a really good writer. Why don't I just write the report and you guys go build the stuff? Okay. That's a big problem too. Okay. It's a big problem, one, because the report's not going to actually match what happens with the design. And the person writing the report doesn't have any knowledge of what happened on the design side, that is a big problem. Right? Then you're not reporting on the actual technical content that you're supposed to be reporting on. The second point there is that some clarity about design comes with writing it and having to explain it to someone else. Okay? So if you're thinking about your design in a way you can explain it to someone else, you're having to distill it down to kind of its simplest pieces. And walk them through why it works the way it does and why you made the decisions that you did. That's going to force you to think more clearly about the problem and improve your design along the way. So you don't get that if the person whose people are doing the design and build are separate from those that are writing the reports. Okay. Last point here is the entire team is responsible for the resulting document. Okay. Your name's on the thing. You're responsible for it. Entire team. It's a team effort. You should care about the quality of the report, not just the quality of the design. Right? Questions so far?
Yes, what if someone is not wanting to do their part?
So the question was, what if someone doesn't want to do their part? I'll answer that more generally. I think that's going to be a problem the rest of your career. You're going to run into folks like that. Hopefully, none of us are ever that person. If you are, do better. You're going to have to work around that. And that's just the short answer to it, right? Within the confines of this class, if it is a serious problem, let us know. We'll try to help you out. We'll talk about some tools, I think in two lectures, to help you quantify and kind of have a contract among your team about who's assigned what. So that can be one way to approach it. Hey, you kind of look here, you sit, without getting emotional about it. So I think that's to try to not be emotional about it is one kind of key aspect there. And then try to identify what the person said they were going to do and force their hand that way. But yeah, that's an issue. Again, you're running your entire career. People not holding up their end. And we're probably all of us will be a little bit of that at some point in our lives. Hopefully as little as possible. Other questions? Okay. So let's talk about the typical sections of a technical document. Almost always we'll begin with an abstract or an executive summary. An executive summary just being effectively a long abstract. Right? Whereas an abstract is typically a paragraph, executive summary might be a page. We will have an introduction section. We'll have some main sections, which vary by the kind of type of document or presentation. And we'll talk about those in more detail in a second. We'll have a conclusion, and then some section of references or the bibliography. The abstract. I want you to think about the abstract as a standalone document. Think about the abstract as a separate document that's summarizing what's in the report. So I should be able to read just the abstract and understand what's going to be in the report I'm getting ready to read. If your company has a database, or there's a database of papers in the library, for example, things that we write as academics, what's going to be there is the abstract. It has to have enough information in it to let the person searching for that document know what they're going to learn if they read the entire document. Okay. It has to be enough and unique enough to your document that it does identify that particular document. Okay. An abstract is also going to identify the reason. In doing all that, the reason for the report, what's the problem being solved or addressed within this technical document? It's going to have a high-level summary of the methods used and summarizes key results. Okay? So, in particular, those last two should be unique to your report. For example, I shouldn't be able to take an abstract out of one team's report in this class and drop it on someone else's and it still makes sense. Okay? It has to be unique to your document. In the abstract, your paper's going to have figures and tables and everything like that. None of those get cited here. Again, think of the abstract as a standalone document. Okay. And in fact, in kind of our class template, we're going to have it as a separate page to reinforce that. Right. The introduction section. Introduction section really is introducing what's the problem that's being solved in this report and why should I care? Why should your reader keep reading the remainder of the report? Okay. That's going to include an introduction to the problem itself, possibly a survey of relevant previous work. This one doesn't come up so much in this class, but will as you go on in your career. This is the problem we're solving, relevant previous work. This is the way other people have tried to solve it and the reasons those solutions are not sufficient. Right. That's kind of what this point is here. In the context of both of those things, you also need to identify what the engineering challenges are. So in the introduction of the problem, it's not just here's the problem being solved. It's kind of why is that a difficult problem? Why is that a meaningful problem to solve? So what are the engineering challenges associated with the problem? Okay. And then the abstract, or the introduction, excuse me, ends, and what we'll say is kind of a roadmap, you know, a roadmap sentence for the remainder of the report. And it's usually sentences. Okay? And they look something like that. The next section discusses blah, blah, blah. Then in section 3, section 4 describes. And you can use this exact language. We're going to be okay with that. You're laying out to serve as a transition to the real meat of the paper and also lays out for your reader kind of like a table of contents, what's coming up. Okay? So they've read the introduction. Or they read your abstract first, or if they downloaded the PDF. Said, yes, this is something I think I want to know. They read the introduction and hopefully clarified, yes, this is a report I actually want to read. And, okay, this is how it's going to go. Oh, I only really care about what's in section 4. So they might skip ahead. There's an example introduction in your book. It's not all going to show up here. But identifies, kind of lays out what an example introduction looks like. Okay. I point out now also, we'll talk a little bit later, there's also a zip file on the class website that has example reports that have kind of good, fair, poor introduction sections you can take a look at and see and compare those for examples as well. The main sections of the report. For design reports, you're going to begin immediately with a chosen and recommended design. Okay, so the introduction is, here's the problem we're solving. The very next section, here's our solution. Okay? And then you provide support for why you chose that design. And in both of these sections, you're going to start at a high level and then drill down to details. Okay? There's probably going to be the tendency in introducing your chosen design to start with all the little small pieces and then build up to the whole thing. The problem with that is your reader doesn't know how all those small pieces fit together until they're 3 or 4 pages into your report. It's going to be really hard for them to understand what's happening. So you want to start at high level functionality and then down to the details so they can understand how it fits together. And we'll do a similar thing when we talk about the support for choosing the design. Okay. For kind of method or theory type reports, like academic style papers, generally we'll logically present a method, right? Quite often focusing on a kind of simple test case, an ideal test case, and then building out to edge cases. Okay. Let's talk more about design reports, since that was what we're doing largely in here. All right. The section immediately following the introduction is a discussion of the final design. Okay. We're going to start with how does it work, right? Most of this is reporting in this class, and these design type reports are about how it works. Okay. So you're going to start with a high level overview, then drill down to lower level details. Okay. One important point about this discussion, there's no kind of pro and con, strength or weakness discussion here. It's just, here's our answer. Introductions, here's the problem we're solving. First section, your final design section, here's the answer. Here's how it works, and then here are all the details of the subsystems work. How it all pieces together. Okay. You are going to need figures of your designs. Right. Figures need to be good enough so where a reader can understand how it works, its functionality. Right. For these kind of design type reports, they're generally not the type of figures you could just hand to a manufacturer and they build the thing for you. These are kind of conceptual level how it works. Not manufacturing plans, usually. Okay. But that does mean that on the figures, you need to label parts according to their function. Right? So motor is not a good label. Drive motor, arm motor, elbow joint motor, right, is a better label. That tells you what that motor is doing for the design, what its function within the design is. You need to provide enough dimensions to give the scale of the design. Is it 10 centimeters? Or is it 10 meters? And as you're, particularly in kind of your final project, and actually mini project 2, you can have separate figures of the subsystems. Right? And that's kind of a common way to attack this problem. You have a lot of information to convey in a series of figures. There's one figure that might label the different subsystems, and then you have separate figures of each subsystem. Right? Depending on how you've done your drawing, that can be actually the exact same figure, just a different view of it, or a different crop within your drawing software. Okay? We'll talk more about figures in a little bit. Okay. Following the final design, this is just, here's our solution, right? Then we need to provide some support for why that's a good solution. And that's what the problem understanding section is going to do. And basically you need to identify and convince your reader what the key customer requirements are, what are the key engineering specifications, What functionality is most important to my customers? Right? And what that's going to work out to be is discussion of three design tools we're going to learn about a week from today. We're going to learn about the house of quality that identifies customer requirements, specification sheet that outlines engineering specs, and a function tree which neatly summarizes the functionality, required functionality of a design. So these tools are not only going to help us in the design process, they're going to help us communicate that process to our audience or our reader as well. So following the problem understanding section, we have a concept evaluation section. And this concept evaluation section actually is there to provide further support for your choice of final design or recommendation of a final design. Right? Here are some other designs we considered, and this is why ours we're recommending is superior. It's kind of the function of this section of the report. Okay? For reports in here, in our class, we're going to require you have two alternative viable designs. That means they satisfy the same customer requirements and same engineering and functional specifications as your chosen design. Okay. And then you have to support your selection of the or recommendation of the chosen design over that those alternatives. The introduction and discussion of those designs follows a similar procedure as the final design. You're going to present the functionality of it, of each design, and then we're going to evaluate those alternatives alongside our chosen design, final recommended design. When we're introducing the alternative concepts, some points within this class or in general, you need to make sure those are true alternatives. Okay? Here's one design that's blue and here's one that's purple. Well, those are not different designs. Those are variations on the same design. Okay? Here's one where the arm is 3 inches long, and here's one where it's 3 1/4. Right? Those are not different designs from a functional standpoint. Right? Those are variations on the same design. And so they need to be true alternative designs. Your discussion of those alternative concepts, you need to have enough detail to understand, your reader can understand how it would work. Okay? This section will probably have a little bit less detail than the final design section, but there needs to be enough there where your reader can follow along and understand how it would work. Which also means you're going to have figures of alternative designs. Okay? And just like the final design, those figures need to have parts labeled according to function, enough dimensions to give scale, all of those things. Okay? And again, no pro-con comes with the introduction itself. Okay? Because that comes later when we evaluate the designs, the kind of next paragraph after introducing the alternative concepts. Because our evaluation is going to be comparing the designs. We can't do that until the reader knows about all of them. Right? That's why we need to introduce all of the alternative designs first. They can understand all the alternatives we considered and compare alongside of us, and hopefully agree with us as we're explaining it. Okay? We're going to learn about a tool called the evaluation matrix. It's going to help us make an objective comparison of designs and how they perform with relationship to our customer requirements. So this section is largely a discussion of that matrix, and or that matrix provides a vehicle to discuss the pros and cons, communicate that information effectively. Okay. Again, the main section, main idea of this section is, hey, we chose this design because it's good at A, B, and C, even though it may not be so good at X, Y, and Z. And by this time in the report, you should have convinced your reader that A, B, and C are what my customer really cares about. And X, C, and X, Y, and Z may matter, but not nearly as much. Okay? And these points, A, B, C, X, Y, Z, better be in this evaluation matrix that you've pointed to it them in this discussion here. Questions so far? Okay, let's keep marching. This next section will only show up in your final report in this class. And it's talking about design performance. Okay? And when we're talking about design performance in the context of these kind of conceptual level design reports, which is the kind of report you're writing, really you're talking about the performance or analysis of a design or prototype. And we want to focus on the design and design process. And I stress that point because basically what we want to do is separate the design from our implementation of the design. Okay? If the design, if your prototype didn't work because you did a poor job building it, that doesn't necessarily indicate that the design itself is flawed. So in this discussion, we want to think about that. And we're trying to tease out and look at its performance, or the experiments we ran, or the final contest results in the context of this class, and think about what assumptions or specs, what part of the design process did we get wrong? Okay? And then how would maybe getting those things right change the ultimate design we got to? Okay? So we're really focusing on the design itself, not necessarily how it was built. We'll talk a lot more about this later in the semester. Reports will end with a conclusion section. The conclusion is very abstract-like. It contains most of the same information. Basically summarizes what was presented, containing no new information. Again, basically the same information that was in the abstract. Okay? Do not copy and paste your abstract exactly. It's the same type of information, it's not the exact same words. All right. So our abstract is a standalone document. Our conclusion summarizes what was presented in the report. Okay. So there's the main sections of our report. Questions? Yes. Yes.
But like, when it comes to like general things like building spaghetti tower, would some part work be sufficient?
Sure. So the question was, well, kind of in the context of the type of projects we do in this class, I'm paraphrasing, how's that prior work stuff fit in? It can be difficult in this class, right? But even within the terms of the spaghetti tower, you have some information of types of tower designs. Right? There are famous tower structures, common tower designs that might indicate to you a proper design for a spaghetti tower. Okay. As you're working more and as you develop more engineering skill and analysis techniques, that breadth, your breadth of knowledge on what's been tried before should grow. So that part of that type of reporting, that part of the reporting should be much longer in your senior design report than it would be for one of our reports in this class. And is in fact is largely a whole chapter in your master's thesis when you get ready to do that, when you go to grad school. Here's ways people have tried this before and it doesn't quite work in this application. Yes?
You had mentioned before in the last class that all these notes are going to get posted on the website.
That's correct. Yes. Okay. So let's talk a little bit. We haven't learned really about the design tools yet, but we'll talk about how to kind of write about design tools and in the abstract, in the high level. When we're including them in the report, you want to avoid parenthetical citation. So we want to use phrases. We don't want to say blah, 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 and then figure one in parentheses, right? Or see figure one in parentheses, right? Make that citation, make that reference to the tool you're discussing part of the sentence, right? So that it flows in the sentence. So as seen in figure X, shown in figure X, blah, blah, blah. Okay. The next piece is to present those design tools. Right? There are going to be things you came up with, things you and your team developed, but you're not going to say, oh, we believe the most important customer requirement is this. Or we think the most important engineering specification is that. Right? You're going to present them as fact. What that means is the most important customer requirement is, because it is true at that snapshot in time. So you can think about them as being pieces of data that you're reporting, not your beliefs. You also need to point out in each of these tools, when you're discussing these design tools, you have to point out what's important to your particular design. Okay? So a common mistake here is describe what the tool is and then give no information about how that tool relates to the actual design problem at hand. Or what influence that the results of that going through that design tool have on the design process for this project, for your team. So, in that context, I know you guys haven't seen the House of Quality yet, but I think you still can pick up on this. Is this a good or bad discussion of a house of quality? What do you think?
It's kind of incoherent.
It's kind of incoherent. Rambling. It's rambling we have.
Figure one in parentheses not as seen in.
Yeah, so they have a parenthetical citation. So that's one thing they could fix for sure.
It's like sequenced.
It's kind of sequenced. And it's sequenced at least partially. I'm going to agree with you saying it's not so great. At least partially because it's way too general. What they're describing here is a house of quality. They're not describing the house of quality that's in their report. Right? This is really just kind of a textbook description of how you would complete a house of quality. Now, there's no information relating, no information from that house of quality as it impacts their design. Right? So this is just way, way, way too general. How about this one? Sure. Everybody hear what he said? So this one's pretty good, right? This spends one sentence kind of explaining what house quality is. That's helpful. That gives a good transition to your reader. We're about to discuss house quality. But then the bulk of this is talking about that house of quality that's in the report, not a generic house of quality. What are the important things in that house of quality for this design process? Okay. And that's not perfect, but yeah, that's pretty good. Still not perfect, but much better. We'll follow a similar procedure when we're writing about designs. We don't want to use parenthetical citation. We'll use phrases. As seen in, shown in, figure X is a drawing of. Figure 3 is a top view of. Things like that. Okay. When you're writing about designs, and your drawings of your designs, you want to exactly match the text in the document to the text that's on the figure labels. Right? Remember we said we want to put labels on the figures according to their function. Exactly use the same labels. Don't make your reader translate between the two. Okay? You also want to avoid referencing other designs to explain the current one. So you want to say, hey, alternative design 3 is just like alternative design 2, but this. Right? Because what you're doing there is assuming that the reader understood the one prior. Right? But then that's also maybe a clue that those are not distinct enough designs in terms of our philosophy of needing distinct true alternatives. Okay? So each design description needs to stand on its own. Okay? So here's an example from your book, and you won't be able to see a lot of it, where they're exactly matching and identifying the terms used on the figure here and those in the text. And we'll talk a lot more about figures in just a minute. Writing tools. What's available to help you with this in this class, and then feel free to leverage them when you get to senior design or later design reports. Right? There's a template on our class site. Okay? A template is in the form of an example PDF that you could look at. There's also a template at this site called Overleaf. Overleaf uses this document preparation programming language effectively called LaTeX. Really heavily used in scientific documentation. Right? Every paper my lab writes is in this particular set of software. Okay. And it has a WYSIWYG mode as well. What you see is what you get. So you can set it up to work like Word where it highlights stuff, okay, if you want. You don't have to use this at all. It's there for your disposal. You can very easily generate reports that are up to what we're looking for in Word or Google Docs or whatever particular set of software you and your team want to use. Okay. Important points in terms of the formatting are understanding that it needs to be consistent, margins need to be reasonable, right? You can look at this document and kind of approximate that in whatever you want, whatever document preparation software you want. There is also, on the class website, I'll show it to you in just a second, what we have a pre-submission checklist. And effectively, it's all the first things we look at when we get reports from you guys. And it's largely all the bullet points we just went through. All right? So use that. All right? Let me show it to you. Get this over there, maybe. Make it a little bit smaller. There's our class site. Scroll down. That template I mentioned, there's a PDF of it. There's a, if you wanted to try to do a lot of tech stuff locally, you could. Or this link will open it right up on Overleaf. And then you can create a free account there if you don't have one already and start working. All right. And again, it's collaborative. Kind of like Google Docs, you and your teammates can all sign in and make changes and all that kind of stuff together. If you want. There's the zip file of example reports. I still need to add a couple more from last semester, but right now it's a 42 megabytes of reports. Okay. So a lot of example reports for you to work through, take a look at. And here's our pre-submission checklist. Okay. And we made it as a checklist. You can go down this list and check off before you submit. And in fact, I would recommend you do that. Okay. So a lot of the things we discussed, you know, not using narrative chronological to construction, no first person, abstract on a separate page, right? So a number of points to help you out, right? Also has points in terms of your presentations when we get to those, okay? And then the actual submission itself. There are checkpoints there to make sure you're submitting things the right way. So again, strongly, strongly recommend you go down this checklist before you submit stuff. And then here I'll show you, this is kind of our class template. So you have title page. Abstract, as we said, is on a separate page. Notice that the title page and abstract page are not numbered. Numbering begins with the introduction section. So this is page one. Okay. Then from there you go. You can take a look at it later. Questions about writing technical documents.